Before I proceed, I would just like to acknowledge my colleagues who also worked on this project, Kevin Masick, Carol Croft, Marcella DiGeronimo, Anne-Marie Fried, and Josep DeLugatz. Regarding this talk, I have no financial relationships to disclose. The main objectives of this discussion is to first discuss the implementation of a sepsis initiative at the North Shore LIJ Health System. The intervention was the institution of an IHI modified severe sepsis 3-hour resuscitation bundle. Number two, to describe the development of a standardized database for the evaluation of process and outcomes data. And three, to share the results of a 2-year observational review of compliance rates with this bundle and its effects on mortality and length of stay. Now, patients aged 65 years and older represent 2/3 of all sepsis and septicemia discharges in the United States. This data, according to the National Center for Health Statistics, also says that hospitalizations for persons with sepsis or septicemia have surpassed 1 million in the year 2008. We have an aging population. In the year 2000, persons aged 65 years or older represented 12% of the population. However, this is expected to increase to 19% by the year 2030. Now, an epidemiological study was performed by Agnes et al. In 1995, and this data was published in 2001 on severe sepsis incidence rates, and he projected that partly due to the aging population, we would expect incidence rates to increase by 1.5% a year. Further analysis was performed, however, on data on the NIS, the nationwide inpatient sample, between 1993 and 2003, and the data revealed that what happened was an outpacing of this prediction, fivefold actually in number, of severe sepsis hospitalization rates. Prior to 2004, mortality rates ranged between 30% and 50% for severe sepsis. So as you see, with the increasing incidence rates and the high rate of mortality, we have a public health concern. The Surviving Sepsis campaign has been working to provide evidence-based guidelines for hospitals to follow since 2004. And IHI, the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, has been working with the Surviving Sepsis campaign to reduce sepsis mortality nationally and internationally. Since the initial publication in 2004, hospitals have reported mortality rates below 21% when compliant with these Surviving Sepsis campaign bundles. As a result, the CEO of the North Shore LIJ Health System has prioritized sepsis mortality reduction as a performance improvement initiative. The health system is located in New York City, in the New York metropolitan area. Has 11 hospitals, 5 of which are tertiary. And to give you an example of our volume, we see over 500,000 ED visits each year and over 250,000 inpatient discharges each year. Now, before I proceed, it's important to just distinguish between sepsis and severe sepsis. Sepsis is a complex medical condition that occurs when a suspected infection is accompanied by the presence of 2 or more systemic inflammatory response syndrome, or SIRS, conditions. Severe sepsis, on the other hand, takes place when organ dysfunction, such as renal failure, accompanies sepsis. And septic shock is a form of severe sepsis that takes place when hypotension, which is low blood pressure, occurs, even though a patient has been resuscitated with fluids. Although the sepsis initiative at the North Shore LIJ Health System was for diagnosing and treating both sepsis and severe sepsis patients, the focus of this study is on improving outcomes for elderly patients with severe sepsis and septic shock. And as I continue this discussion, just note that when I speak of severe sepsis, I'm including the septic shock population, as this is a form of severe sepsis. I have a timeline that's very detailed that I was hoping that everyone would have handouts to look at for further review, but as time limits, I'm just going to speak on what has been highlighted. So in March of 2009, our task force was initiated and established, rather, and it was a multidisciplinary team of physicians, nurses, epidemiologists, data analysts, and they got forth and overviewed reviewed the severe sepsis campaign literature and defined the bundles and defined the disease, actually, and decided to focus first on recognition of sepsis in the emergency department before a patient was even admitted into the critical care unit. Later that year, the sepsis task force worked with the quality management team of our health system to develop uniform septic metrics that would be used in a central database so that they could monitor performance improvement at our system using the bundles. A database was developed in early 2010, the first 4 months of 2010, and a notable milestone was reached in August of 2011 when IHI partnered with our health system to help educate our clinicians on recognition of the bundles, recognition of sepsis and implementation of the bundles. Now, in January 2012 is when the present severe sepsis three-hour bundle elements were finalized. Collaboration with IHI provided extensive education to our clinicians to first quickly recognize severe sepsis and to successfully implement the severe sepsis resuscitation bundle. Now, recognition is complex because first it's different in the inpatient units than it is for our ED patients. We use SIRS criteria, which is systemic inflammatory response syndrome criteria, which has been established since 1992, and it is of these three different groups of criteria that classify a person as having severe sepsis. For the ED, we use super SIRS criteria, which is something that our system actually established. I have the difference of SIRS criteria and super SIRS criteria defined in the handouts, but for the sake of time, I won't be able to go into that right now. But basically, once the person was identified to have severe sepsis, that was considered time zero, and then the clock would start clicking, and you would have 3 hours from that time of patient identification of severe sepsis to administer the full bundle. So the bundle elements were blood cultures assessed before antibiotics administered, administering the broad-spectrum antibiotics within those 3 hours, having serum lactate values obtained within 90 minutes of order time, and fluid bolus administered within 30 minutes. Monitoring those four separate processes required uniform data collection of those key metrics. In our health system of our 11 hospitals, some of our hospitals are using paper records, some are using electronic records, and those that are using electronic records are not using the same electronic records. So we needed a central database, and Krasnov Quality Management Institute, KQMI, a division of North Shore LIJ Health System, was charged with developing that tool. Data elements related to diagnosis and administration of the bundle were delineated by the clinical members of the task force to KQMI. Expert staff at KQMI then developed a user-friendly web tool with an Oracle database as a backend to capture the demographics, the clinical data elements, and the process and outcome measures. Logic was programmed into the web tool to aid in accurate and clean data entry. I provided for you a screenshot of the diagnostic elements, the SIRS criteria, and you could quickly scan them if you don't have handouts with you, the SIRS criteria versus the super SIRS criteria that we developed, and the new organ dysfunction criteria, which is the criteria for diagnosing persons with septic shock. And you'll see where the arrow is pointed, that we have a definition of the diagnosis elements for the data abstractors to use to aid them in entering the data into this database. Another screenshot has been provided of our database of the bundle elements. You see that there are indicator variables next to each bundle element stating whether or not they received that bundle element, and if so, a date and time had to be entered. I have just those two screenshots to provide for you, but we also had discharge disposition, demographic data, other clinical data elements in our database. Now, this database allowed for statistical analysis of what the adherence rates were of the bundle and also to calculate the association of the adherence rates with mortality and length of stay. So we performed a retrospective observational cohort of analysis of patients aged 65 years or older, discharged between 2012 and 2013 with severe sepsis or septic shock. Our elderly population represented 70%, not two-thirds, but 70% of all severe sepsis cases. We excluded transfer patients in this analysis, and also cases with documented goals of care at the time of sepsis identification that precluded compliance with the treatment bundle. The N size was 8,059, and 96% of our patients came through the ED. All or none bundle compliance was computed as a binary variable for each patient with severe sepsis. I'm sorry to say that you don't see the full graph here, but what I have are the four individual bundle adherence rates. Blood cultures is 90%, antibiotics and lactate 85%, and what's below that is the fluid bolus element. The adherence rate for that was 58%. For all of our elements, there was an improvement in 2013, a significant improvement. The fluid bolus was the most challenging to complete by our ED physicians, being that it was required to be performed within 30 minutes. And as you know, the nature of an emergency department, the ED physician has many patients to juggle at the same time. So unfortunately, our all-or-none bundle adherence rate was brought down by that. All-or-none bundle adherence was 41.9% for the system. It improved 10% from 2012 to 2013. That was significantly different. And for our tertiary hospitals, the adherence rate was 40.3%, and for the community hospitals, it was 44.9%. The difference between the tertiary hospitals and the community hospitals were significantly different, and this was tested with the chi-square difference test. Our primary objective was to examine whether or not an association existed between adherence to the system's severe sepsis bundle and mortality. The mortality rate for the non-adherent set was 3.4% higher at 25.6%, and this difference was tested with a z-test for independent proportions. The p-value was less than 0.004. We performed a logistic regression, and we did this to calculate adjusted odds ratios for each of our bundle elements and for the bundle as a whole. We adjusted for age, weight, and for admission unit. And as you can see, two of our bundle elements were significant, the antibiotics and the lactate measures, and the bundle as a whole was significant as well. The odds ratios presented here are for mortality for the non-adherent set. For the complete sepsis bundle, the odds ratio was 1.22, and for broad-spectrum antibiotics, you'll see that it was 1.29. We decided to look at broad-spectrum antibiotics a little further, and we separated time to antibiotic administration into 10 90-minute intervals and mapped out the mortality rates. And as you'll see, mortality rates for the first 180 minutes ranged between 22 and 23%, but as time went on, into the last three 90-minute intervals, it peaked at 46%. We used a chi-square trend test and chi-square linearity test to test whether or not this was a significant trend. It was, and there was no departure from linearity. So we see that with the time delay to administer the antibiotics, the patient was in danger of a higher mortality rate. Secondary objective was to examine if morbidity was improved via adherence to the severe sepsis bundle, evidenced by a significant reduction in length of stay. Length of stay was reduced by 1.2 days, and that was significantly different. Finally, we did an exploratory analysis on patients that had a current episode of antibiotics at time zero. I'm sorry for the way this appears on the graph here. The mortality rate for patients who did not receive blood cultures prior to their antibiotics was 41% versus 26% for those who did receive blood cultures on before they received the antibiotics. This yielded an odds ratio of 2 and a p-value of 0.001. Now, this was significant because we did not include this set in our bundle. Persons with antibiotics coming into the hospital that were on antibiotics on the floor were considered already compliant, so the blood cultures component was excluded for that set. However, it just so happened that there were persons who did receive blood cultures first, and we were able to do this exploratory analysis and see that there was an extremely significant difference for persons who did not receive these blood cultures first. Finally, the limitations of the study is that it's observational, so a causal relationship cannot be inferred. There were missing date and time values, so not all patients were assessed for adherence, and it would be best not to include patients that had clinical reasons for exclusions from the analysis. In conclusion, this is not a pre-post intervention study, but an observational review of all and non-adherence. And please note that the education of our clinicians was taking place throughout the entire cohort period. Sepsis shock mortality and severe sepsis mortality at our health system before IHI partnered with us was 30%. However, by the year 2013, this overall mortality rate was 22.6% for this set. So we have seen significant improvement with this population. Complete adherence is associated with lower mortality and length of stay. So our goal is to continue to strive to have more patients complete the bundle. And finally, for patients on a pre-hospital administration of antibiotics, the hypothesis is that they're on the inappropriate antibiotic entering the hospital. As you can imagine, a lot of them are coming from nursing homes. And it's inappropriate to assume that they had blood cultures taken at that nursing home, and that we need to do that again at the hospital to improve outcomes. So while a further examination is underway, which I plan to do, looking at the data more in detail, it's recommended to obtain blood cultures on all patients meeting severe sepsis criteria entering into our hospitals. Okay, so is there any questions?